Thank you, everybody, for being here this afternoon. We have visitors, and thank you for joining us. It's always encouraging to have people with us to worship God, and that is our goal this afternoon, is to worship God and to learn more about His Word so that we can more fervently follow His commands and be better servants of His. We are going to be reading from Mark chapter 5 this afternoon. And from my understanding, Steve also preached from Mark chapter 5 this morning. We didn't plan that. That's just what happens when you study together a lot, I guess. You're both thinking about the same chapter. We'll be looking at the beginning of this chapter, though. The first 20 verses of Mark chapter 5. Here there's a very interesting story, and this whole chapter is just packed with action. As you learned this morning, the latter part of this chapter is filled with examples of Jesus' healing power. And in the beginning of this chapter is Jesus' power over demons or over unclean spirits. So this whole chapter is packed with Jesus' ability to heal whatever infirmities He is faced with. So in the beginning of Mark 5, He's faced with this man who's possessed with a demon. Let's just begin by reading the first verses of this chapter, and then we'll talk about these verses. Verse 1, "Then they came to the other side of the sea, to the country of the Gadarenes. And when he had come out of the boat, immediately there met him out of the tombs a man with an unclean spirit, who had his dwelling among the tombs. And no one could bind him, not even with chains, because he had often been bound with shackles and chains, and the chains had been pulled apart by him, and the shackles broken in pieces. Neither could anyone tame him. And always night and day he was in the mountains and in the tombs, crying out and cutting himself with stones." Okay, so think about these verses with me. In verse 1, of course, we are told about Jesus. Jesus' goal was always to go and to teach, and that's exactly what he's doing here. He goes to the other side of the Sea of Galilee, and he goes there with the purpose of teaching, just like Jesus did anywhere he traveled. Jesus' goal was always to teach the gospel. But as he does that, when he gets off the boat, immediately he is faced with a very interesting character. Notice how this man is described. Now, we're told that this man is possessed with an unclean spirit, but we're not given more details about that until a little bit later in the chapter. So first, just focus on what this man would have looked like. Put yourself in Jesus' shoes, stepping off the boat, and this is what comes running at you. And really, his description is only like something maybe out of a horror movie. I mean, this is a crazy picture. This man, as he runs towards Jesus, he has an unclean spirit, we're told in verse 2. He lived, in verse 3, among the tombs. He lived in a cemetery. I mean, that's where this man lived, was among the graves, which already is just a crazy picture. This man who lived in a cemetery, he couldn't be held down. This man had so much strength that when they would try to tie him up with chains and with shackles, he would just break them off and keep doing whatever he wanted to do. Not only that, but we're told in verse 5 that he would always, night and day, be yelling, crying out, and cutting himself with stones. So put all of that together. You have, no doubt, a crazy-looking person with an immense amount of strength, living in a cemetery, probably covered in blood, and we find out later, probably didn't have any clothes on. I mean, this was an absolute nutcase. Stronger than any human that we would encounter today. And this is what Jesus is faced with as soon as he gets off the boat. Why was this man like this? Now, we're told he had an unclean spirit, and we're given a few more details about that in the next verses. This is probably too small for some of you to read, but continuing in verse 6. "When he saw Jesus from afar, he ran and worshipped him, and he cried out with a loud voice and said, 'What have I to do with you, Jesus, the Son of the Most High God? I implore you by God that you do not torment me.' For he had said to him, 'Come out of the man, unclean spirit.' Then he asked him, 'What is your name?' And he answered, saying, 'My name is Legion, for we are many.' And he begged him earnestly that he would not send them out of the country." Okay, let's pause in verse 10 for a moment. So now Jesus begins to talk to this person. But really, before Jesus can do anything, it's this man who's running up to Jesus. This man addresses Jesus before Jesus has a chance to address him. And in what we just read, it becomes pretty clear that the man himself isn't really in control. It's the demon that's doing the talking. It's the unclean spirit who is communicating with Jesus. So this conversation should be taken as Jesus communicating with the unclean spirit. That's who Jesus addresses in verses 8 and 9 and who answers in verse 9. But this demon, as he comes up to Jesus, the first thing he does is he worships him. An unclean spirit worshiping Jesus. Now, I don't think this is worship in the mindset of serving Jesus and giving his life over to Jesus. This is the idea of worship as showing respect to him as who he recognizes him as, the Son of God. But that's what the demon, the unclean spirit, immediately does. Worships Jesus and addresses him in verse 7 as the Son of God. This demon even recognizes that Jesus is the Son of God. This reminds us of a verse in the book of James. James chapter 2. James chapter 2 verse 19. This verse says, "You believe that there is one God? You do well. Even the demons believe and tremble." So, this man, it should be no surprise to us, this demon believes that Jesus is the Son of God. So James uses that point to say, if you believe in God, you're about equal with a demon. It's not getting you very far. But this demon clearly believes that Jesus is the Son of God. And so Jesus, as he communicates with the unclean spirit, has given the command for the unclean spirit to be cast out of the person who the unclean spirit was living in. We see this many other times in the Gospels. Jesus commands that a demon come out of a man, and it has to. It has no choice. The demon must leave when Jesus gives the command. So before the demon comes out of the man, we see a little conversation take place. Jesus asks him, "What is your name?" And the answer is very interesting. In the end of verse 9, "My name is Legion, for we are many." This demon dwelling inside the man was actually many unclean spirits. Many demons. We're not given an exact number, but later in the text, probably even as many as several thousand demons inside this man. But even if it's just two, surely no one wants two demons living inside of them. But this explains a little bit of this man's strength, maybe. His ability to rip apart chains and shackles. He has what is referred to as legion, many demons living inside of him. So then the demon in verse 10 begged Jesus earnestly that he would not send him out of the country. Okay, now that's an interesting phrase. The demon begs Jesus, "Don't send me out of the country." In order to get some more explanation on this, let's go over to the book of Luke. As you all know, the Gospels oftentimes will have the same account in multiple different Gospels. You can find the feeding of the 5,000 in several different Gospels, and this is no exception to that. It's recorded in Luke chapter 8. The same story is talked about, almost word for word. But we see in Luke chapter 8, verse 31, that there's a little bit of a different detail given here. In verse 30, Jesus asked him, saying, "What is your name?" And he said, "Legion," because many demons had entered him. And they begged him that he would not command them to go into the abyss. So this word translated, "go out of the country" in Mark, is the same idea as "don't cast us into the abyss" in Luke chapter 8. The abyss, or bottomless pit, as it could be translated, is referring to hell, referring to the dwelling place of demons and the destination of Satan. These demons, most likely, are begging Jesus, "Don't send us to hell. Don't send us to the dwelling place of Satan." They don't want to go there. Now, just a little bit of a sidetrack real quick. Perhaps this isn't what the demons are asking, but I still want to take this sidetrack just for a minute. I think sometimes we get this picture in our minds that hell is a celebration place for Satan and for his angels and for any demons that join Satan. I know I've had that picture in my head. I think it's thanks to Hollywood. They create hell as this image of celebration for Satan and for his angels. Did you know that the biblical picture is nothing like that? Go over to Matthew chapter 25. Matthew chapter 25. I think it's important that we don't have that picture of hell. Matthew chapter 25, verse 41. This is where Jesus is describing the separation on the day of judgment between the sheep and the goats, between the servants of God and the rebellious. And in verse 41, He will say to those on the left hand, the rebellious, "Depart from me, you cursed, into the everlasting fire prepared for the devil and his angels." What does that tell us about the everlasting fire waiting for the devil? It's not somewhere where Satan wants to be. It's not somewhere where he enjoys going to hang out with all of his demon buddies. It's something that God prepared for him as a place of everlasting punishment. I think it's important that we realize that. I think all of us know that, but sometimes we get that false picture in our head. Even, back to Mark chapter 5, even the demons don't want to go there. They don't want to go to that terrible location. In fact, as we continue reading in the text, they would choose something that's pretty gross over going to this place. Verse 11. "A large herd of swine was feeding there near the mountains. So all the demons begged him, saying, 'Send us to the swine that we may enter them.' And at once Jesus gave them permission. Then the unclean spirits went out and entered the swine. There were about 2,000. And the herd ran violently down the steep place into the sea and drowned in the sea." Okay, so the demons ask Jesus, "Don't send us out of the country." And then Jesus says, or the demons then ask, "Send us into this group of pigs." There were about 2,000 swine, 2,000 pigs on a nearby hillside. The demons would rather go live with some pigs, live in some pigs, than be cast out and have to go to hell. Now, reading this passage up to verse 12, when the demons ask, "Don't cast us out, let us go into some pigs," what do you think Jesus is going to say? If you had asked me without reading verse 13, I would have been almost sure Jesus would say, "No way. There's no way I'm going to let you go into some pigs instead of being cast out." But Jesus gives them permission. Jesus lets them enter these pigs, which seems strange to me. But I believe verse 13, the conclusion, makes it make a lot of sense. When they enter the pigs, now, since they can't live in the man, they have to live somewhere else, or they have to go back to their country. Now they enter the pigs, and what happens to the pigs? They run off a cliff, and they die. So then, what are the demons left with? I think their destination is still the same. They just went through the pigs to get there. But through that, Jesus is able to bring another group of people into play. Remember, up to this point in Mark chapter 5, Jesus has only encountered this one man with demons inside of him. And through the pigs running off the side of the cliff, now Jesus is met by another group of people. But before we read verse 14 and following, just think about what we've learned so far in Mark chapter 5. We've learned Jesus has immense power. Jesus was just faced by a legion of demons. And Jesus, with no hesitation, is able to cast this demon out. Jesus' power is incredible. And this morning you saw that in the last part of Mark chapter 5 as well. Another thing that we've learned just up to verse 13 is that hell is a terrible place where even Satan and his angels and possibly even these demons have no desire at all to go. So, continuing now in verse 14. Those who fed the swine fled, and they told it in the city and in the country, and they went out to see what it was that had happened. Then they came to Jesus and saw the one who had been demon-possessed and had the legion sitting and clothed and in his right mind, and they were afraid. And those who saw it told them how it had happened to him who had been demon-possessed and about the swine. And they began to plead with him to depart from their region. Okay, so now we're introduced to the local crowd, the people that would have lived nearby, the people that took care of this herd of pigs. And these crowds come to Jesus, And their first reaction is fear. First of all, we're told that they were afraid of Jesus in verse 15. And then, as we continue to read, the people ask Jesus to leave. Now, I think it's easy to read over that detail. But all of the local people, when they see what Jesus has done, they plead with Him to leave. What if we knew Jesus was right down the road? What if we knew Jesus was here physically and He was close by? Now, I realize that that can't happen. But if we knew that He was that close, what would we do? Would we go ask Him to leave? No, of course not. We would want to talk to Jesus, get Him to heal any sick people. I mean, we would want to be as close as possible, I hope. But these people, they ask Jesus to leave. They want Him to get out, away from their region. Perhaps they didn't respect Jesus as the Son of God. Perhaps they didn't believe that that's who He was. Or maybe, and this is what I tend to believe, maybe they were just mad about the fact that they lost all of those pigs. And they want Jesus to leave before He can do any more damage to them. But now look at the man. The demon-possessed man, we read in verse 15 that this man who had been demon-possessed is now sitting there instead of running around. He's clothed now and he's in his right mind. Jesus' power on this man has had a tremendous and visible effect. So now in verse 18, when he got into the boat, he who had been demon-possessed begged him that he might be with him. However, Jesus did not permit him, but said to him, "Go home to your friends and tell them what great things the Lord has done for you and how He has had compassion on you." And he departed and began to proclaim in Decapolis and in all that Jesus had done for him, and all marveled. So now this man, how did this man behave after he encountered Jesus? It's a complete transformation. He's a completely different person. We realize that Jesus' words were able to tame the man that human chains couldn't. It's pretty incredible. Jesus' words were able to heal this man that couldn't even be bound by human strength. So this man, now that he has been healed by Jesus, he asked Jesus, "Let me go with you. Let me continue wherever you're headed." And Jesus, which again comes as a little bit of a surprise to me at least, says, "No, I want you to stay here. But it's with a purpose. I want you to stay here so you can talk to your friends and family about what has happened to you." So that gets us through verse 20. But look at the reactions. This is where I want to focus for a couple minutes. Notice how these groups of people react. I believe it's always very helpful and very motivating when we investigate people's reactions. Think about in the book of Acts. On the day of Pentecost in Acts chapter 2, Peter preached, he told the truth about Jesus. Do you remember how they reacted in that occasion? They were cut to the heart, and many of them were baptized. They obeyed. But then we have Acts chapter 7, where Stephen preaches a very similar sermon talking about Jesus. Do you remember what they did there? They were pricked to the heart, and they stoned Stephen. So seeing these different reactions to a very similar message helps us see the kinds of hearts that react to Jesus. And it helps us investigate more how we respond to Him. So think about these groups of people. We have the people of Decapolis on one side, and then we have the singular man who is possessed with the demon. Think about these local crowds, first of all. When they see Jesus, they are afraid of Him. Now, we need to fear Jesus. We need to fear God. That's very clear in Scripture. But based on their actions, the kind of fear that they had of Jesus wasn't a respect and an admiration. It was a fear that Jesus was going to do more damage to them. They were afraid of Jesus, even after He did amazing things. We see that not only they're afraid of Him, but they plead with Jesus to leave. The language in verse 17, they began to plead with Him to depart from their region. They're begging Jesus to get out of their lives. So, they want to be far away from Jesus. They want Jesus as far away from them as possible. And Notice, when Jesus was told to leave, he did. Did Jesus have the power to stay and to resist whatever they could have faced him with? Absolutely. When Jesus was asked to leave, he did, though. So the people of Decapolis are afraid of Jesus. They pleaded with him to leave so that they could be far away from him. And I believe it's because they were focused on personal loss. They were focused on the fact that they had just lost all of these pigs. Or perhaps they were just focused on their own personal fear. Whatever the case is, think about what they did lose. I don't know how much pigs are worth. I'm sure someone in the audience could tell us. 2,000 pigs, there's got to be a lot of value there. Even if you only get $50 or $100 per pig, that's a lot of today's money. And I'm sure it would have been valuable then. You know, somebody was planning on selling these pigs. Somebody was planning on eating these pigs. I mean, 2,000 pigs is a pretty big deal. And when they lose all of this, they ask Jesus to leave. But then in contrast to that, think about the man who was healed. Think about the demon-possessed man. Instead of being afraid of Jesus, he is amazed at what Jesus has done. He is amazed by the fact that Jesus has enough power to cast out all of these demons. And it's clear by the words that he says to Jesus that he's amazed at what has happened. Instead of pleading Jesus to leave, he pleads to join Jesus. Do you know what he said in verse 18? The man who had been demon-possessed begged Jesus that he might be with him. This man pleads to join Jesus, and he wants to be near Jesus. He wants to be close to the one that has saved him from these demons. He wants to be close to the one who has removed all of this terrible parts of his life. He wants to be close to Jesus. And then as we go a little bit further into the last verses, verse 19 and 20, instead of focusing on all that he lost, he focused on his usefulness. Remember what Jesus told him in verse 19? Go home, tell your friends what God has done for you. And we didn't talk about verse 20 yet. The man departed and began to proclaim in Decapolis all that Jesus had done for him, and all marveled. This man focused on where he could be useful in God's kingdom. I think it's cool that this man realized he could help. And so when Jesus told him, stay and teach, do you know what he did? He stayed and he taught. And apparently he had result too, because all the people were marveling after he had taught them. Do you see how different these reactions are? They both saw a very similar thing. But yet, the man who was demon-possessed, because Jesus had affected him personally, he got to work. And he started serving Jesus. Another thing to notice is when Jesus tells the man to talk about what he had received, did you notice how simple it was? Jesus' commands in verse 19, go home to your friends and tell them what God has done for you and how he has had compassion on you. Do you notice how simple that is? I think times we can complicate things a little bit too much. Sometimes we think that in order to talk to someone about God, we have to get them to worship services. Now, is inviting them to worship services and having them come a wonderful thing? Absolutely. That's something that we can be doing. But is that the only way to tell them about God? Not at all. Sometimes we think we need to sit down with them for several hours and explain all the details of the gospel to them. Is that what we have to do every time? Again, that's a really good thing, and take advantage of those opportunities when we have them. But Jesus' command is, go tell your friends what God has done for you. That's something all of us can do. Sometimes I believe we will be helped, and I will be helped, if we will focus on simply telling people the amazing things that God has done in your life and in my life. Let's turn to Ephesians chapter 2 for a moment. Ephesians 2 is a chapter that I go to a lot because it really helps put things in perspective for me. And it backs up this idea of we can tell people something simple. Now, if we talk to someone and we explain to them what God has done for us and they have more questions, then welcome those questions. If you don't have the answer, then talk to Steve or talk to one of the elders. Get some help to continue to talk to that person. That's an amazing thing that we can do. You don't have to be scared of that. But it can be very simple. Ephesians 2, verse 1. You He made alive, who were dead in trespasses and sins, in which you once walked according to the course of this world, according to the prince of the power of the air, the spirit who now works in the sons of disobedience, among whom also we all once conducted ourselves, in the lusts of our flesh, fulfilling the desires of the flesh and of the mind, and were by nature children of wrath, just as the others. But God, who is rich in mercy, because of His great love with which He loved us, even when we were dead in trespasses, made us alive together with Christ. You know, that's basically what Jesus told this man to share. He said, go tell them what God has done for you. And we can do the exact same thing. The man who had a demon, before he encountered Jesus, he was dead to doing what he wanted. He couldn't. He was in control, or the demon was in control. Before he met Jesus, he didn't have any positive things to share. But after he met Jesus, he was freed. He had the ability to go and to talk, and to talk about Jesus. You know, Ephesians 2 says the same thing about us. Before we came to Christ, we were dead in our sins. But verse 4 makes the great switch. God, because of His great love, made us alive. That's a simple thing that we can share. And I believe we have the responsibility to do that. We can keep it simple. Talk to people about what God has done for us. So in Mark chapter 5, when we see Jesus has power, then we can react in one of two ways. We can react like the crowds and the people of Decapolis. We can push Jesus out of our lives because He makes us uncomfortable. We can do that. That's our choice. Or we can react like the man who Jesus healed. We can get as close to Jesus as we can and see where we can be useful. Even if that means getting outside of our comfort zone sometimes. We have the choice to react in one of these two ways. And of course, it's clear in Scripture that choosing to follow the man who was healed, choosing to react and get close to Jesus and help where we can, is clearly the better choice. Matthew chapter 25, we referenced it earlier, but it paints a clear contrast. Those who choose to rebel and push Jesus away, all that's in their path is everlasting destruction. God doesn't want anyone to perish. He wants you to choose to be like the first part of that chapter. Those who choose to serve God and help others. And what is in their future is salvation and everlasting life. The choice is clear in Scripture. But sometimes it can be hard on a daily basis to make that decision. If you haven't given your life over to God, if you haven't been baptized, then think very seriously about the choice that you're making and whose example you're following. If you're living in sin, again, think about the seriousness of these things and the choice that you have to make today. If we can help you in a public way, make your way up to the front while we stand and sing.